Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvin Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvin Vora.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I want to talk today about a tradition at the college that I went to. During the reading period before exams, this is when, you know, many people are just studying all the stuff that they maybe shouldn't have, that they should have studied during the year, or were just reviewing stuff that was very difficult, just struggling in the libraries. There was a tradition of handing out donuts to people who are studying, and traditionally, if you were handing out donuts, you did that naked, without any clothes on. And it was a nice bit of camaraderie. There, anybody who wanted to could be on the naked donut handout squad. Generally, I would say on average, most of the people that were majoring in, you know, computer science or math, or some of the really, really time-consuming, difficult majors, usually weren't on the donut brigade, although some certainly were. And many of the people on the donut brigade were people who had, so many of them were people who were in some of the lighter majors, though again, certainly not all. And plenty of the people who received donuts were from different majors. But the point isn't that there wasn't some major stereotype, but the point is that you had some folks who handed out donuts and some who didn't. And there was camaraderie, because usually the ones who were handing out donuts in some way had it a little bit easier. They felt like they had it easier. A lot of the time they just had their exams earlier, so they didn't have to worry about it. Or maybe their class had papers at the end of the year instead of exams, so they didn't have to worry so much and they would hand out donuts. And it brought us together in a lot of ways. It was ridiculous. It was silly. But we felt support. You know, you felt like you were connected to the people handing out the donuts. If you were one of the handouters, you felt connected to the people who were struggling. Now I want you to imagine a different situation. You take this thing that's nice. It has camaraderie. It builds community. It's kind of funny. It's silly. It's irreverent. It's supportive. It's all these good things. Now I want to change one thing about it. I'm going to change just one thing about it, and then think about how different it becomes. Imagine if, instead of it being a nice voluntary tradition, it was a requirement. Imagine that. Imagine if they just said, listen, if your class has papers instead of tests, then you need to strip down, buy some donuts, and hand those donuts to the people with tests. Or maybe it could be done by lottery. You could say, we're going to select some people at random and you will strip down and hand out donuts. It's not the same anymore, is it? It's gone from a nice bit of silly end-of-the-year camaraderie to an atrocity. It's gone from something kind to something horrific. It's gone from something that builds a community to something that would only create enmity. If people were required to strip down naked to hand out donuts, that was a requirement that you had to do it or else you get kicked out of school, I imagine that there'd probably be a little subtle sabotage going on. Maybe the donuts would be outright poisoned. Maybe something lighter. You can use your imagination as to where those donuts might be put before they're handed out. But you see how important that bit of voluntariness is. When you do something voluntarily, it makes the community stronger. When you take that exact same action, and make it coercive, it destroys the community. It creates enmity. There are so many people I know, some who are libertarians, some who are Republicans, some who are Democrats, some who are something else, who wake up very early on Sunday, or very early on Saturday to work in various food pantries through their churches or through other organizations. And they go there and they put together food and they hand it out to people who want food. Some of the people who are handing out the food are white, some are minorities, they're all races, all different ages, And again, this is something that brings the community together. I mean, there's so many people that I know who've become very connected to the people who they give food to. They've seen those people pull themselves up. Some of them have gotten good jobs. Some have started small businesses. I mean, there's so many. It's so inspiring to hear these stories. And the people who participate in this process are refreshed by it. They themselves are made stronger. They themselves are more connected to their own community and also to their own humanity. Even though it's, you know, you're waking up at 5 a.m. on a weekend, it sounds miserable, but by the end of it, for so many people, it's almost like the highlight of their week. So many of the people handing out food, some of them are rich. It's not that they couldn't just buy the food or have somebody else do it, but they want to be part of it. They want to be connected to the community. They want to give food, and they also want to be able to provide whatever else they can, you know, moral support, advice, whatever. It's important. And now let's change that again. Let's make that same tiny change and say, listen, what if we make the rule really simple? If you happen to be a lawyer, we're putting a new tax on you. This tax says that you have to wake up at 5 a.m. Saturday, Sunday. We don't care what you did during the week. It doesn't matter if you're tired. Wake up 5 a.m. Saturday, Sunday. Get in there. Feed these people some food. Put the food together. It's not materially that different. The surface isn't different. The actions are the same. And yet, what have you done? You've created enmity. You've taken something that people would do and do. This is things that people are already doing. And what does it do? It destroys the community. When you allow people to voluntarily support each other, it strengthens the community. You turn that into a forced requirement. Now you create enmity. People who would be brought together are now enemies. Now, before you say, well, that just kind of happens by accident when people use force, you know, they make laws and make taxes to force people to help each other. That's just an accident. They're not trying to divide our community. The government isn't trying to divide our community. It's an accident. They didn't mean to do it. It just happened. Sometimes we make mistakes. That is complete and total nonsense. Complete nonsense. There is no chance that this is an accidental thing that happens, because you can see when it happens intentionally. In New York City, in one of the highly publicized and strange laws that was fought against but not successfully, there was a tradition. Many Jewish synagogues where a lot of the grandmothers would get together, bake fresh bagels, give them to the homeless. Voluntary. And that brought communities together. That brought communities that might not normally connect together. And that made them stronger. It strengthened the communities. It strengthened the people in the communities. And what did the government do? It banned it. Said you can't do that anymore. Why? They came with some silly, nonsensical reason about, well, they don't know what goes into the bagels. I mean, as if, you know, the people who are baking bagels voluntarily in a synagogue or trying to, I don't know, poison them or something. It's not a really reasonable fear there. They wanted to divide those communities. Because when we are connected voluntarily, we're strong. And we can resist government abuse. You take those same connections and you make them forced, it shatters us. It separates us. It makes us vulnerable to the government. It makes us easier to manipulate. And sometimes, had they made that a requirement, my guess is people would have complained, but they probably would have been just done it. So they outlawed it because they knew that making it a requirement wouldn't be enough. They outlawed it to shatter those bonds of the community. Communities are strong. They're some of the strongest things we have. But they can be damaged once they've been made coercive. Handing out naked donuts, being naked and handing out donuts voluntarily, it's fun. It brings people together from different majors, different study styles, whatever. all of a sudden you make it coercive, now you have an atrocity. Handing out food to the homeless, it brings us together, it refreshes us, it connects us. Make it coercive, and now you're creating enmity. You're shattering a community that would normally be brought together. That is being brought together, right? Why normally it is being brought together right now? The same is true with any kind of support. Many of the people who hand out food in a lot of these organizations, you know, religious or secular, many of them are very opposed to welfare. They're willing to put in all this work to help people in need, but once it's coercive, now it's something they're opposed to. And some of them are opposed to it on pragmatic reasons, in that welfare creates generational poverty, it doesn't help anybody. Some of them are just opposed to it because it's different to be forced to do something. It's wrong to be forced to do something. One of the things that libertarians recognize is that you must take the coercion out. A community can be strong voluntarily. You cannot force a community to be strong. When you try to force that community to be strong, you only create enmity. You turn people who would be friends and allies into adversaries. That's why we support ending all welfare and replace it with the kind of charity that builds communities. We support ending all welfare, regular welfare, educational welfare, government schools, health welfare, all that welfare. We want to get rid of it because we recognize that not only is charity more effective, but also it strengthens the bonds that we have between ourselves. It makes our community stronger. In so many countries, doctors will have a day out of the year. It's very common in India, where they'll see anybody for free. And again, that connects the community. Some do it more than one day. Some do it a week. Some do it a few days. Some do it a month, depending where they are in their lives and how established they are. And again, that's something that strengthens a community. It doesn't divide it. But even a casual glance at politics shows how divisive coerciveness can be. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Have you found the beauty inside of you? Join Bonnie Bonadeo each week for Beauty Inside and Out. We'll explain how beauty plays a part in everybody's lives. Our guests are makeup artists, hairdressers, and doctors. But we'll also feature holistic and wellness specialists and spiritual advisors. You can find that beauty inside and express it to its fullest on the outside. Tune in to Beauty Inside and Out every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. Earlier this week, as not surprisingly, I had some stuff out on social media that's gotten a lot of folks triggered up. And today I'm going to take some questions that are coming out in the on social media right now. One of the questions comes in. So just to back up a little bit, what's the original comment? I pointed out I'm mocking many of the people who I believe have good hearts but maybe insufficient courage, who I've often heard saying things like, well, this group is doing the wrong thing, but they vote, so we can't speak against them as people. We can't speak against them individually. We should only focus on the policy. And that's been applied to everybody. People say a DEA agents, they vote. Well, we shouldn't say anything against them, even though everything they're doing is wrong. People in the military vote, so we can't say anything against joining the military because then we might lose their vote. That's what a lot of these people have good ideas, but in my opinion, insufficient courage. Folks will say, listen, we know that government schools are the worst things. We shouldn't go after the people who work at or attend or are benefited by government schools. Yeah, and benefited, I don't mean benefited educationally. I mean, you know, they use government schools. No one is benefited by government schools at all. But we shouldn't say anything about that because, you know, teachers vote as a block and we don't want to turn them away. And that's the kind of stuff that we've been seeing a lot. So in order to mock this, I posed very simply. Guys, a lot of rapists vote. So we shouldn't say anything against rapists because we might lose their vote. And, of course, that got everybody pretty, pretty angry. Or it got some people pretty angry. Other, you know, several hundred other people just thought it was funny. But it got some people pretty angry. And so the question says, why do you think veterans and public school teachers are as bad as rapists? Well, that's not really the point being made. The point being made is that trying to gain somebody's vote is not a reason to suddenly start to be immoral or dishonest or to lose your principle or to have no character. When somebody is doing something wrong, it is our job to say that they're doing something wrong. If saying it politely works, say it politely. If saying it rudely is more effective, say it rudely. Say it however you want. But if you go around worshiping the military, what you're doing is encouraging other people to join the military. And I get where a lot of folks are coming from. They say, listen, people who are in the military, veterans have suffered often so much that to then say something on top of it just seems like you're kicking a dog while it's down. It just seems so, so mean. And I get where people are coming from. I certainly understand where that comes from. And if it was just a question of veterans, then I would probably just agree. I would probably just say nothing. You know, I would say they suffered enough. Why should I add to their suffering? That's what I would say. But it's not just about veterans. It's about the people who are 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 years old. They're weighing this decision. Should I enlist? Should I join the federal government's military? And one of the things that they will consider, that they always consider, is respect, social respect. They see how active duty is treated. They see how veterans are treated. They get a little bit of a social boost. And that's one of the things that they consider. It's not the only thing they consider, but it's a major thing. Many people in the military have told me that while in the military, they didn't make very much money. They did it because they had loyalty. They had loyalty built into it. But one of the reasons they joined in the first place was that it was respectable. Many people I know who run businesses in highly military towns often can't get employees. They're paying more than the military pays. But a lot of these kids' parents think that being in the military is very respectable. So the reason that I think it is incumbent on us to fight that, because it's not about the veterans, it's about the next generation. What the military has done right now is very clever. They've broken so many of their veterans down so completely that we feel bad saying anything about it. For years, I felt bad saying anything about it. That's why I didn't say anything about it for years. It's not like I just figured out 2 days ago that being part of the military is a bad idea. I didn't say anything. Because I said, what good is it going to do? Here are people who are suffering, who've already suffered. Why add to it? But then I realized that it's not just them. It is the next generation. It is our job to guide the next generation. And it's not about what we say. It's about what we do. if we end this military warship, if we end that warship completely, fewer people will join. Will no one join? No. Some people still join. But fewer people will join. And before you say, well, that would never happen, actually, it's already happening. It's happening right now. Military can't get enough recruits. It's already happening to the police. There's so much hatred against the police right now, thanks to a lot of the work of activists who have called out the police. Police used to be just as worshipped as the military is, and now they're being attacked socially. You know, I still don't condone violence before anybody gets any ideas. But they're being attacked socially, and that is damaged police recruiting. Police in many cities cannot get enough recruits, and that's a good thing. That's how negotiation works. We should be saying, listen, we will not enlist until you change this foreign policy. Until you start shutting down those foreign bases, bring the troops home, we're not going to enlist. Or for police, we're not going to join the police force until you end the drug war. If you want to keep the drug war going, fine, but you won't have any police at all then. None. That's what we need to say. Government school is very similar. Many people recognize that homeschooling is academically superior, obviously. That's a no-brainer. But that it builds more in more self-reliance, confidence, curiosity, adult social skills. People talk about social skills like that's something you learn in government schools. You don't learn social skills in government schools. You learn bad social skills. You learn how to either bully or be bullied. You learn how to use drugs. You learn all kinds of degenerate behavior. Those aren't social skills. That's juvenility. Many of us, when we were kids, and I was certainly part of this group, when I was a kid, I thought that homeschoolers were weird. Now I realize I thought they were weird because they acted like adults instead of acting like teenage prisoners. And so it's necessary for us to go after that sentimentalism. Right now, government schools are being sentimentalized. Teachers are being sentimentalized as a PR shield. And I go after them because I know that until we destroy that sentimentalism, government schools, military overreach, all of that's going to continue. But if we shatter that sentimentalism, if we demolish that sentimentalism, if we let logic and reason and thought replace that sentimentalism, then it's going to be done. All those military bases are going to shut down. Those public schools are going to close. Why? People just leave. Let's see what are some of the other questions. Ian asks, did you subscribe to a different ideology before anarchism? If so, what was it? It's an interesting question. The first time I heard of anarcho-capitalism, I thought, this is the stupidest idea I have ever heard. At the time, I was, you could say, somewhere between a centrist and a minarchist. I believed in less government socially and less government economically. But a lot of the positions that I have now, I didn't have then. I mean, I knew that government schools were bad. That's just because I worked in education. I could see that they were bad. I mean, that was simple enough. But a lot of the other positions I didn't hold at the time. Going in through the process from, you know, centrism to minarchism to anarchism was not something that happened overnight. It happened over months, over years. It took a lot of people willing to talk, willing to challenge what I was saying. I remember talking about, you know, when I was running for office, talking about reducing some particular tax. And somebody asked me, by what do you justify any taxes at all? And I was thrown by it. I thought it was unfair. It was unfair. I'm here talking about cutting taxes, and he's making me seem like I'm pro-tax. But people like that were the ones that really helped me start to consider these questions very deeply and very, you know, unemotionally, going past sentimentalism. It was not easy for me to admit that taxation was theft. I just thought taxation was just, you know, normal. It's just part of life. Now, as I've learned, I'm realizing that the things that people say we need to have an income tax for, we don't need to have an income tax for. I've realized that forcing people to pay for a thing is usually unnecessary, almost always unnecessary, maybe always unnecessary, and always destructive to a community. I've met people who were born anarchists. I am not one of them. It was a long process. It was a difficult process. Those of you who are thinking about it, you know, ask questions. And yeah, sometimes anarchists can be a bit abrasive, but not all of us. There's many very, very polite anarchists. There's many very abrasive anarchists. There are many anarchists that specifically like to go after the emotional parts of statism. I am one of those people. I believe that statism thrives or exists because of sentimentalism. And so I go after sentimentalism. Let's look at some of the other questions over here. We'll do one quick question before the break. So questions, some of these, I'm going to boil these questions down into one, which is, have you ever done, you know, pick your name of drug? And the answer is no, I don't do drugs. I believe that you have the right to, though. And that's an important thing. And if you know me, if you're friends with me, if you're one of my close friends or acquaintances or whatever, chances are I'll probably try to convince you to stop doing drugs. I'll probably try to convince you to stop drinking. But I'm just going to try to convince you. See the difference? I'm not going to force you. If I force you, that's going to turn you into my enemy. If I try to convince you, you might find it annoying sometimes. But that's all it's going to be, occasionally annoying. That's not enough to turn us into enemies. And that's the thing. The war on drugs, what does it do? It dehumanizes people because it says, we are so much better than you. We're going to use force on you. You don't get to make decisions. We'll make the decisions for you because you're a child or a dog or an animal or something like that. We're going to take a few more questions after this break. But first, if you want to get involved in the libertarian movement, if you like some of the things I say, or if you hate some of the things that I say and want to fight them, go to lp.org. See how you can get involved in an existing campaign. Or if you don't like any of the existing campaigns, see how you yourself can run for office. And see how you can use that to bring so much attention and focus to the cause of liberty. Right now you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Voice America Network proudly presents The Catherine Zox Show for women, men, children, and families. Catherine magically combines her compassion, experience, and talent to bring listeners a show that's upbeat, informative, and yes, a little sassy. Tune in every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern to The Catherine Zox Show on the Voice America channel.
Fire can destroy your home, your business, and your life in seconds. On Speaking of Fire, with co-hosts Mike Schlattman and Donna Ingram, we investigate fire, the origin and causes, and provide important information to prevent accidental fires and save your life, loved ones, and your property. We speak to experts about technology, investigative research, and insurance issues with regard to fire. Tune in Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
I'm busy and so is my family. Leftover pizza and unhealthy takeout isn't really doing it for us anymore. Just ask my bathroom scale. That all changed when I found Freshly. For less than $10 a meal, Freshly delivers 6 meals a week, always fresh, never frozen, prepared by top chefs and nutritionists using the best, freshest, gluten-free ingredients. The best part is the menu is always new and fresh, just like the food, and it only takes 3 minutes for me to prepare breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and there's no messy cleanup and no dishes. My family loves the choices and the taste, and Freshly delivers to my home and my office, so I eat healthy all day, every day. If you're tired of the same old cardboard delivery and takeout, try out Freshly.com today and save $20 on your first order using coupon code VAH639 at Freshly.com. Your taste buds and your scale will thank you. So save $20 today with coupon code VAH639 at Freshly.com.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I had such an interesting conversation a few months ago with a libertarian who, interestingly, worked at a government school. She was frustrated with it. She was ready to leave, and she wanted to be part of something better. And we talked about, you know, homeschooling communities and free market education and all that. You know, we had a very interesting conversation. And in that conversation, I realized how so many people who, like myself, are drawn to education. I've been drawn to education from a very early age. I've been drawn to education since I was in high school. You know, I was a volunteer teacher in college, and then I was a paid teacher in college, and I started an education business. And I've been drawn to education for a long time. But there are many people who believe, at some level, that the only place in which education is happening right now is government schools. So if you want to be involved in education, you have to do it through government schools. If you want to reach people, you have to reach them through government schools. If you want to work with the rich, government schools. You want to work with the poor, government schools. But that's false. The free market in education is huge. Some of it caters to the rich. Some of it caters to people kind of in the middle. Some of it caters to the poor. There are parts of free market education that are free. They do so much good. There are parts of free market education that are expensive that do a lot of good. When you put your skills in the service of government schools, if your skill is education, when you put your skill in the service of government schools, you are endorsing government schools. If you don't believe me, let me give an example. Let's say there was a program out there called Nazi Math. It was run by Nazis, and in the Nazi Math program, let's say it was free to anybody. And they taught math at a literal level. Let's say they taught math well. They didn't use Common Core or anything stupid. They actually taught math well. And let's just say, just to add a little color to it, that all the word problems were just extremely bad and disgusting. If you then chose to teach at Nazi Math, everyone on Earth would assume that part of that action meant that you believe that Nazi math was good, or at least okay. It's an endorsement. When you choose to work at a place, you are saying it's okay for this place to exist, at the very least. You're saying, of all the plays that I could be doing, this skill of teaching, I choose this one. You're saying that of all the forms of education that are happening, I choose this one. I choose the government school one. When you do that, you are failing as an educator. Education is about teaching the truth. That's what it is. It's not just about math or reading or chemistry or whatever. Math and reading and chemistry are only good because they're types of truth. If you teach false chemistry, that's bad. If you teach people incorrect ways to read, that's bad. If you, through your actions, give the message, the undeniable message, that the best place for you to get an education is a government school, how am I saying that? By working at a government school, then you are failing as an educator because you are telling your students a lie. Now, if you happen to just believe that government education is good, well, then we can disagree about that. Doesn't mean you're maybe failing at education in that way. Maybe you just have some bad ideas. And I would certainly want to discuss those ideas. But if you believe that government education is wrong, and then you participate in government education, you are lying to your students through your actions. I often tell my students when they ask, or after class, I'll just mention that I don't drink, or I mention that I think drinking is stupid. I do. It's my right to think that. Now, if I went around and told students not to drink and drank all day myself, what are they going to listen to? The words or the actions? If you're an educator or a parent, you know that kids don't listen to words. You know, they only listen to actions. Whatever it is that you do with your actions is what they're going to think is right. If you say don't use swear words, and then you use swear words all the time, they're going to use swear words. If you say don't use swear words and you don't use swear words, they might listen. If you say government schools are bad, and then you yourself participate in that, it's only the actions that are going to matter. And that's not just what kids believe. That's what everyone does. And so in order to move forward, to make education meaningful, to actually follow these basic principles of education, this responsibility to the truth, you have to leave government schools. You have to find something else. What can you find? There are many, many jobs in private sector education. There's a huge demand in private sector education, in free market education. Connor asks, would you commit political, racial, or national origin-based discrimination? For example, would you remove a person from your property for the sole reason being that you found out that he or she is a communist? That's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. I think, I mean, at a personal level, it seems, I mean, I can't imagine why anybody would want to at a personal level. But let's look at the question that actually comes up in politics a lot. So at a personal level, no. Well, let's look at the question that comes up in politics a lot, which is more business related. As in, would you refuse to serve somebody because of their race or their beliefs or their sexual orientation? Would you refuse to have them as a customer? No, I wouldn't. To me, the only color that I care about is the color of somebody's money. If it's green, great. If it's gold, better. If it's whatever color Bitcoin is, even better. But that's me. To me, I don't particularly think homosexuality is a sin. I just think it's a different lifestyle. Some people say it's genetic. Some people say it's voluntary. I just don't care which one it is. Maybe it's just a choice. If it's a choice, it's your choice. Maybe it's genetic. Fine, then it's genetic. I don't really care what somebody does as long as it's not being affected. As long as it's not affecting me. And so, would I ever turn away a customer because of something like that? No, because I wouldn't want to. Now, notice that because I think I don't have the right to. I just don't want to. I would prefer to have the money. But what if I did want to? What if I did want to? Do I have that right? Absolutely. Let's say that my business was so popular and so organized that I could just turn away money. Yeah, it's my right. I mean, I think I'd still say it was kind of stupid, but it's a right. I have the right to wear my clothes inside out if I want to. I don't think it's a great idea, but I have the right to. You don't need to punish people for businesses for engaging in discrimination because the discrimination punishes itself. And I don't mean in the long term. It punishes itself immediately. The second you turn away a customer, you've lost money. It's an immediate punishment. As you do the action, at the exact same time you're being punished for the action. If you turn away, and it's not even just turning people away. What about just accommodating people? Let's say you live in a city where most of the people speak a different language. You run a restaurant. You have a choice. You don't have to write your restaurant menu in any other language than English. That's up to you. But you'll probably realize that if you put some other your restaurant menu in another language, in the language that everybody's speaking, you're probably going to get some more money. Maybe you hire some staff that speak that language. Why? It's going to get you some more money. I'm not saying you have to. I'm just saying I think it's a good idea. Now, if you choose not to, if you say, listen, I don't like other languages, fine. But understand you're going to pay the price immediately. Not in the future. Not 20 years down the road. Not in heaven. Not in purgatory. Not in hell. You're going to pay the price right away because you're going to have less money. You're going to be able to buy less things. You're going to have less freedom. You're going to have less of all the things that money gets you. It might not be important to you. Maybe money doesn't matter to you at all, and that's totally fine. But for most of us, it matters. So most of us in business go out of our way to appeal to different cultures, different languages, different thoughts, different approaches. I mean, it's not even just culture. If I know that some people really like to write with a blue pencil, let's say I found out that everyone liked blue pencils, I would just get some blue pencils. I don't care. Because that's what I want. I want my customers to feel happy here or to feel like they're benefiting. I want my customers to come to my business. I want them to patronize my business. I want them to spend money at my business, not at somebody else's business. If somebody else is doing their business in another language that's popular, I'm going to put mine in two languages that are popular. And that's just a common way to grow and improve a business, to increase the revenue. So do I think that as the question's asked, should a quit Christian baker be required to bake a cake for a gay couple? No. But I think that if they do, they're probably going to get some benefits, specifically the sale of that cake. And if refusing service matters more than money, fine, that's your choice. You get to choose whatever is important to you. But to me, and to the vast majority of businesses in the entire world, money just matters more than prejudice. It's just more important. Now, if you want to build that ideology, if you want to help people understand that you don't need to use force to fix these things, you don't need force to fix racism. Racism punishes itself with less money. Please go to lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you or someone you know interested in attending college? With both college tuition and college enrollment up 60% since 2002, there is a lot of competition, and careful planning needs to be a part of the process. Tune in to Getting In, a College Coach Conversation, hosted by Elizabeth Heaton and featuring a team of college coach experts. We'll bring you the tips, techniques, and know-how to navigate the road to college and do so the smart way. Listen live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
We live in perilous times on a beautiful yet fragile planet. As a species, we are not doomed to self-destruct. We can live in peace and in love for one another. We can save this, our only home. We must mature. Open your mind. Soften your heart. Listen for the fate of humanity. Crucial conversations for our survival. With host Lauren N. Nile. Tune in. The Fate of Humanity airs Wednesdays at 6 a.m. Pacific Time and 9 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.
If you're an influencer, you don't follow the trends, you set them. Voice America influencers are involved in creating change in personal and professional lives, collaborating and driving value to make our lives better. We have world-renowned thought leaders, speakers, authors, entrepreneurs, artists, and some of the most influential voices today. Listen in today to what they have to say. Engage in the conversation. The Voice America Influencers Channel. Be inspired. Answer the call.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. Benji asks about the tendency of immigrants to vote Democrat because they pander and offer free things paired with open borders. That's actually really interesting. There is that perception that immigrants primarily vote Democrat. Interestingly, that is largely something that's fabricated by the Democratic Party. Well, the statistics in front of me right now, but many, many immigrants vote for other parties. What the Democratic Party has successfully done is make immigrants who vote for other than Democrats afraid to say anything. And what they do is real clever. They have all these, you know, there'll be organizations like, you know, Greater Washington, D.C., Asian Americans or something like that. Just, they don't put the word Democrat in the name. They're like, hey, we're going to have a political discussion circle. It's going to be open, nonpartisan. But God help you if you say anything that's not about what the Democrats like. Like, God help you if you say anything about cutting taxes. For a long time in those organizations, I went to a few, I was just afraid to say anything at all. Eventually, I learned that sometimes the best thing you can do is just trigger those folks until they just can't be triggered anymore. There's nothing wrong with sending a whole pile of statists home weeping. If they are literally shaking, that's fine, because then they're literally not doing anything terribly damaging. And so, as a child of immigrants myself, I would recommend to other immigrants who feel, who believe in libertarian ideas, say it. Yeah, people are going to get upset. The first time, the second time, the third time. You know what? After the 20th time, they'll just be like, yeah, that's just what he's kind of about. That's what he's like. That's just how they're going to, it won't even bother them. But the good thing is this, other people around you, they're going to see what you're saying. And they're going to agree. There are many children of immigrants, many immigrants themselves that I've personally recruited the Libertarian Party, and I'm sure there's thousands more that I maybe have indirectly done so. And if you look at all the people that everyone else has done, we're talking about thousands, millions, so many people. But that only happens because here's the thing. When you're an immigrant, maybe your language skills aren't so good, or maybe you're not as culturally used to the situation, and you feel shy about being the only person in a room to say something. But if you, now I'm talking to you, the listener right now, if you will say something, then other immigrants will back you up. Because they don't want to be the only person arguing against 50 Democrats. But they don't mind being one of two. And if they do, when you get maybe two or three people, they don't mind being one of five. It's scary to be the first one. Even for me, I'm usually the first one. You guys know that. I'm usually the first one to bring up a thing, but sometimes it's a little scary for me too. But it's much less scary to be the second one. It's much less scary to be the third one. And so I don't think it's that immigrants vote Democrat. I think it's simply that there's so much Democratic cultural dominance, especially in urban areas, that they just feel scared to say anything. If you want them to stop being silent, then you need to speak. Your voice will give courage to people who are silent. That's the key thing. Your voice gives other people courage to speak. And I mean, you got to do it courageously, though. Because I know it's as libertarians, we love to do that thing where we give a say something in such complicated and abstruse ways that no one knows what you're talking about, and then we feel like we're being brave. I'll give you an example. Here's the wrong way. The wrong way is to say, I believe that a person owns themselves and engages in whatever transactions they want to and in medicine of any kind that they believe in with respect. No one knows what that is. Here's what you need to say. End the drug war. Your body, your choice. Do what you want. Smoke what you want. Say if you get in a jury, you're going to say not guilty if it's a drug-related crime. I say that all the time. I'll happily lie to get on a jury and say not guilty to a drug crime. Drug trafficking, drug selling, drug using, fine. Say it boldly. And yeah, you're going to get some negative feedback. That's okay. That's your job. Take that negative feedback because now you're the shield of everyone else in the room who used to be silent. As a single person, you can shield 50 people or 1,000 people. That's the key thing. Immigrants are quiet because they're often in an unfamiliar environment. That's all it is. Most people, when they're in a strange environment, sometimes feel a little bit uncomfortable, especially if they're talking about divisive politics. Maybe their language skills aren't so good that they can really have a high-speed, fast debate. But I promise you this, and this has been my own experience, that when you are bold, when people see that you're willing to be part of the fight no matter what, they will speak. Maybe not the first time, maybe not until the 10th or 20th time. And you can do that wherever you are. If you're in college, you can do it in college. In high school, you can do it at your job. You can do it in your church. You can do it in your community. You can do it wherever you are. And you don't need any special skills. You don't need to be good at hiding your words. In fact, you need to be bad at hiding your words. You need to be as bad as possible at hiding your words. You should be good at being blunt and direct so that everyone knows what you're saying. So that the dumbest person in the world knows exactly what you mean. They might not agree with you. That they don't need to. They just need to understand what you're saying. We'll do one more question before the end of the show. Alex Merced, legendary Alex Merced, asks, libertarian stance on burrito sushi? That is exactly what libertarianism is about. It's about taking different ideas from different cultures, putting them together. It's about innovation. It's about trying out new things. It's about being benefited by your innovation or paying the price when your innovation doesn't work out so well. It's about taking responsibility for your own decisions. It's about saying, I'm not going to be part of the status quo. I'm going to try out different things. That's the great thing. That's what innovation is. People think that innovation just involves satellites and iPads. No, it involves any time you do anything at all differently. Even if it's a small difference. No matter how small the difference is, that's innovation. That's what libertarianism is. What do we have in restaurants? We have innovations like burrito sushi. What do we not have in the forest market? Any useful innovations at all? Thanks so much for listening today. There are so many things we can do working together. We can make our communities voluntary and stronger. We can get rid of a lot of these corrosive, sentimental ideas that prevent us from moving forward. We can get rid of these restrictions on each other, get rid of these restrictions on freedom and business, but it can only happen if we actually work together on it. And if you want to work together on this, if you want to be part of this solution, please go to lp.org. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week. We'll be right back.